Welcome to Conversations with Owens Community College President, Dr. Dion D. Somerville. Welcome to today's episode of the Conversations Podcast. I'm Dr. Dion D. Somerville. Thank you for listening today. Whether this is your first time with us or if you're a longtime follower, we're so happy that you're joining us as we explore the issues and meet the people who are important to Northwest Ohio and to Owens Community College. Thank you for listening today. Please enjoy our previous episodes and subscribe to Conversations to join us for future episodes. Today, I am so excited to welcome Dave Robinson, founder and principal of the Montrose Group, a consulting firm specializing in corporate site location, economic development planning, and government relations. With over 30 years of experience, Dave has successfully negotiated numerous corporate site location projects across various states, developed strategic economic development plans, and represented clients before local, state, and federal governments. His background includes serving in the Ohio House of Representatives, press secretary for the Mayor of Columbus, and general counsel for the Ohio Chamber of Commerce. An accomplished author, he has written two economic development textbooks and has taught at Ohio State University and Bowling Green State University. He holds degrees from Bowling Green and from the Ohio State University College of Law. Hi, Dave, and thank you for being our guest today. Dave, thank you so much for being on the Conversations podcast. I am thrilled to have you here. Our partnership with Montrose is incredibly meaningful to us, and we believe that a lot of the progress that we've made has been directly as a result of your efforts at the Montrose Group. So thank you so much for being here.
I am very excited to be here, and this is, you've given us too much credit. I'd give you credit. You're phenomenal. Just do a great job in interacting with public officials and great job running the college. So
thank you.
Easy work.
One of the questions we ask all of our participants is, how is it that you knew that you needed education beyond high school, and what was that journey like?
I had no choice. My parents were teachers, and my dad's only requirement was that I needed to go to college, but I could not become a teacher. But I think for us, for my sister and I, it was always just a given that we were going to go to college. We were fortunate to have parents that were teachers, that were engaged, you know, went to a Catholic elementary school and a good public high school in a suburb in Columbus. And, you know, for us, it was just kind of a given that that was the path you're going to be on. So it was an easy decision.
So his rule was that you couldn't go into education, but you went to Bowling Green, which is literally was founded as a normal school to prepare teachers.
Surrounded
and still has one of the best teacher schools in the state.
It's got, you know, produces a ton of teachers. I loved college. You know, I got everything out of it. I was a RA in the dorms and student body president and 68 other things that I was doing the whole time. So for me, college was just a great experience.
That is wonderful. Did they let you use the D word? You didn't call them residence halls?
I called them residence halls because you had to. The residence life people would yell at you. You couldn't call them dorms. And I was a resident advisor.
Okay.
Did it for 2 years in the big party dorm and barely survived, but it was a great experience.
That is wonderful. Yeah. That is wonderful.
Yeah. So my dad passed away 5 years ago, so he's not able to listen to this, but I did go against his judgment and I did teach college. You know, at the law school at Ohio State and at the public policy school. So maybe there was an inner teacher in there someplace that I let sneak out. So
I didn't want
people to think I didn't respect the profession.
Owens does have some online offerings. And so if you ever wanted to adjunct, you know, we know people.
Yeah, you know people.
We know people.
I like that. I'm for it.
Awesome. So can you tell folks how Owens and Montrose became partners?
Yeah, we've been very active in the lobbying world. I'd been a member of the General Assembly and started, kind of left there and went to a law firm. And for about 10 years in law firms, ran government relations and lobbying economic development practices. 16 years ago, started the Montrose Group, and we had been engaged in the higher ed world from a lobbying side. That engagement ended, and it was just kind of perfect timing. You know, it was just you all were looking for someone. You know, the State House is a challenging atmosphere for higher ed, much as a lot of large institutions right now, I think, politically are struggling because populism is what we're dealing with, quite frankly, with both political parties. And populists don't like big institutions. And it's so that to me, for us, the timing was perfect.
Well, for us, it's been very much a worthwhile endeavor because what it is that you bring to us in terms of expertise and guidance and exposure, all of those things, we can't deploy into Columbus the way that you already have the expertise and relationships and the insight and the knowledge, particularly given not only your background, you know, you and the rest of the colleagues at the Montrose Group, but also for you in particular. And so it's been helpful for us.
We're excited because we see it as a great fit that, you know, Owens isn't just focused on state policy or federal policy or usually it's funding initiatives, but it's also the critical economic development role you play in Northwest Ohio that we have gone from 30% plus of our employment base in the United States being employed in manufacturing to under 10%, but we make more stuff. And the reality is we do that because we've automated and we've embraced technology in our manufacturing sector, which means that the old model 100 years ago where someone would be in 10th grade and they would just go to work in the factory or maybe they'd finish high school, you know, get training on whatever they were going to do and they would do the same thing every day, day in and day out for years, that model's gone. So really for us, it's been a great mix because we're focused on that economic development piece, working with companies and communities and as well the lobbying piece. And that's exactly what you're focused on. Right. So it's for us been kind of a seamless fit, you know, and a great partnership.
So part of what we talk about is the presence and being there for conversations and engagements and things of that nature. Why is that so important?
Well, you know, and I've served in the state legislature and I've worked as a lobbyist for, you know, almost 30 years in a world of term limits, right? Where an Ohio House member can serve for 4 elected terms and a senator for 2 elected terms. Maybe they get appointed, maybe they get 10 years, you know. It's like trying to drink from a fire hose to understand everything you have to deal with. The budget's a $100 billion program, you know, with thousands of programs in it. And we were just in talking to a freshman House member. You know, I said, well, this has had to be interesting for you. Kind of, it's great that you start with a budget. And she just looked at me with like a look at like I was crazy. She's like, this has been insanity. You know, they literally have 15-minute meetings where it's one after the other after the other. And at the end of the day, they got to put their head on their desk because their brain's got to be completely fried because 15 minutes on higher ed is then followed by 15 minutes on Medicaid. And then it's 15 minutes on criminal justice and 15 minutes on what, you know. So it's not our world where we have, you know, really good understanding of what our issues are. For the policymakers out there, it literally is like trying to drink from a fire hose. And especially when they're doing the big operating or big capital budgets, because it's really intense with a lot of different interest groups wanting their attention. So the more often you can interact with policymakers, you know, not just when your hair is on fire, right? Not just when you're getting your 15 minutes to pitch your wares, but, you know, like this winter, we had the Northwest Ohio legislators up to a facility we're trying to get done up in Toledo, had them for an hour.
Right.
Gave them a tour, chatted for 15 minutes with them before we started. It's part of building that relationship because they need to trust you. They need to trust us. They need to believe what we tell them because whether they agree or disagree, they're going to, at some level, rely on what we communicate. So we do need to be present. And it's also tough if all you're being present is 15 minutes when the fire hose is on. You want to also interact with them on a regular basis. I mean, I love doing meetings when I'm not asking for anything or when we get our graduation list,
right?
Our dean's committee list. It's like, hey, go congratulate, you know, these students. Students love it. Ultimately, on my side of it, lobbying is about relationships. But for you and for the college, you're really that subject matter expert. And I feel like I know a lot about higher ed. I'm never going to know. You're going to forget more about higher ed than I know with the experience you have. But think of the questions we get.
Yes.
You know, we go in to talk about a program we're trying to do, and we talk about that. Then they'll ask, a question about an admission policy or something they saw in the news about some other school in some other state. And just being a resource, in my mind, is something that really helps. It helps us, but quite frankly, it helps the policymakers.
I remember when our relationship first started, you used the term partnership.
Yeah.
And how is it that we can be in, you know, partnership with our public officials, understanding that there's a natural convergence of certain priorities? And
how can we be, aligned with one another on things that matter?
Yeah.
And so that really kind of keeps coming up for me, understanding that our biggest source of funding is either the state and or the students themselves, yeah. depending on, how you slice it. And so to me, that's been an important guiding principle for the work it is that we do.
Well, it's absolutely that, because I think there's some folks that deal in lobbying or advocacy and say, well, our role is really as an educator. I don't agree with that. I think we're a resource. I think we're an expert. I've always tried to think about how do you align your client's perspective with what the policymaker's concerned about from either a policy position or from a political or a campaign, or how do we, in essence, structure what we're advocating for to be aligned with what the voters think. Not always easy, right? Because again, ultimately the voters are right. We have elections on a regular basis. But, again, I think you're going to tend to be more successful with policymakers if you define a challenge, define a solution that they think is something they could stand up at a candidate's night and defend, right? And then illustrate how that solution, if you get support for what you want, helps make that happen, right? So partnership's got to be where both parties are winning. And I don't know if I got that perspective in serving in office or working on campaigns, but ultimately I think the partnership is the right model to be successful mm-hmm. in advocating.
You do bring an interesting perspective, because while your educational background has served you well, both at Bowling Green and at Ohio State, you literally have had three different careers as part of that.
Yeah.
And so, but when you think about the themes and what has kind of served you from one phase to the next, it really has been partnerships and aligning, and even the work, where you've helped us with economic development.
Yeah.
It really has been, bringing together business and industry from not only the individual, but more on that macro level of here's where your industry associations are, here's where the trade organizations are, here's where their positions and needs are, here's where Owen's offerings and where we can stretch maybe, and how do those come together and creating those opportunities. And so it really is kind of, as I look at your career outside in, it seems like a big theme of what you've done.
For me, it hasn't seemed like rocket science. Right. I'll give you an example, not from you. We're representing a developer that's bought a high-rise office tower in downtown Columbus.
Mm-hmm.
It's a tough time to own mm-hmm. office right now because of work from home. They're pretty empty. First thing we're helping with is finding the right partners. He has an idea what he wants to do with the vision, but really build out that vision. Who's going to be the designer that can help rework a plaza? And again, all of that getting done, not by us, by other firms, is going to make our requests and the work we do to build a public-private partnership easier. But he can't do that without partners.
Right.
Right? Now, we could just go help him, and we could just put together a little one-pager and say, this is what he wants to do with the building. Give us this money. Give us this tax credit. Give us this access to this program. But I feel like our chances of success would be a heck of a lot better if he had the right partners in that said, well, here's the picture.
Mm-hmm.
Here's what I want to do with the first floor. Here's the plaza I want to make. It's those partnerships that'll make him successful. And I don't know how you do anything by yourself. I mean, I guess there's companies that big enough that can just do what they want. I don't think long-term they're going to be successful. I think you're always better off trying to find partners in the work you do,
mm-hmm.
but also partners with the public officials to say, we want to do X. How do you think we can get there?
Now, so much of your work is Ohio.
Yeah.
But you also have experience outside of Ohio as well. And so what are some of the things where you would compare how things work inside our state versus outside? And what are some things that we really have going for us?
Yeah, we've one of the things we do is corporate site location work for companies. So we've negotiated location deals in Kansas City and in Arizona and in Des Moines. We've looked at Indy, we've looked at, Raleigh, Durham. We looked at a bunch of different markets out there. I think Ohio is doing very well. It's not an ultra fast growth state. You have basically the entire South that for decades, maybe four decades, has been booming.
Mm-hmm.
I think a lot of it was driven, Honda came to Ohio first in the 80s mm-hmm. as a foreign direct investment from Japan. The other global automakers said, well, that seems pretty smart, because the reality is it's not cheaper to make a car in Germany or Japan than it is the United States. it's cheaper here. And this is a huge market.
Right.
So unfortunately for Ohio, you saw states like Alabama, you know, get the Hyundai plant when we wanted it and get a Mercedes plant and get an Airbus, you know, airplane manufacturing facility. So you really have had the global auto, steel, you know, aerospace industry invest in the United States much more so in the South than in the Great Lakes states.
Right.
But it's easier. It was cheaper.
Right.
There was no one there, you know, and the reality is whenever you develop anything, it's a greenfield's always easier than a brownfield or a place that already is filled in. So, you know, Akron was the fastest growing city in America in 1920. So we're doing, I think, very good because we have a great base of employers. I am worried that we're not really growing from a population standpoint and haven't been. And really, if it weren't for the growth in the Central Ohio marketplace and maybe the Cincinnati marketplace, the state would be losing people. So again, I think we've got great state. I'm born and raised and educated here. But I think if anything I'm worried about is we need to find a way to retain our talent and attract new people to the state.
So much of what we've been focused on is not only the how is it that Owens has a place in those priorities, but also how do we get people engaged in training and education who weren't previously.
Yeah.
Because to your point, we can't reverse the clock and, you know, suddenly have a change in our population.
No, you especially since COVID, you've had a 3 or 4 point drop in civilian labor participation rates. Some of our major metros in the state have a 14% bachelor's degree rate. You know, the 2-year associate degree rate isn't really any better. There's a lot of room for growth. I mean, I know we've seen that, you know, as you've explored growing into, you know, the urban core of the Northwest Ohio up in Toledo, that there is room for growth, that there are folks that not just are unemployed, but they're underemployed. And if they had a chance to invest more in their education, to get more, in essence, to upskill where they are now, they could leave a retail job. They could move up the ladder in a healthcare institution. Maybe they start as an aide, but if they got, you know, some more education, they could eventually work their way up to being a nurse. That's a dramatic wage increase.
Absolutely.
For their families. That might be 3 times what they make in those situations. I don't know if there are really any other way to grow your population other than to upskill and keep continuing to educate from above a K-12 level and keep them. If all we did was keep the kids that went to our colleges, our community colleges, and our universities, we'd be fine.
Could you provide some context for the 14%?
Yeah.
Because I know, like, in economic development, there's a lot of conversation around educational attainment of the city or the population that folks can draw from. But how does 14% compare to other cities?
Well, you know, first of all, and there's a million data points, right, you can get for any community to decide if it's, you know, how well is it succeeding? And you could have a very low bachelor degrees rate, but a really high manufacturing employment base that they don't really need a bachelor's degree. Maybe they need certificate programs or 2-year programs. But it's pretty clear when you look at the regions that are growing and the regions that are growing not just in population or wealth, that a pretty big criteria is the level of their education. And I think the city of Columbus, not the metro area, the city of Columbus is about 34% with a 4-year bachelor's degree. Cincinnati's about the same. Columbus has 1 million people in it. You know, the city of Columbus is actually bigger than Cleveland, Cincinnati, and Toledo put together from a population standpoint. So you could go all through the South. You could go to these high growth markets of Nashville and Raleigh and Austin. They are attracting basically either a tech worker base or an advanced service financial services worker base, that areas that have a 14% bachelor's degree rate aren't going to have. And it also becomes very difficult to attract corporate headquarters. Because again, and I think Toledo is very fortunate that they still have a strong base in the region. They're not necessarily in the city as much anymore, but they still have their corporate headquarters here, where unfortunately you can go to like counterparts like Dayton and Akron that don't, you know, that have really lost that kind of corporate headquarter base that was kind of the community that really help get stuff done. So again, I think it all depends what you want from an employer standpoint. But if you want anyone that wears a collar for a job, if you want tech workers, if you want really high level advanced manufacturing, it's tough to get with a 14% bachelor's degree rate.
So you had mentioned manufacturing. And that has long been a stronghold of Northwest Ohio.
Absolutely.
But we also know that the economy in the state overall is changing.
Yeah.
And you talked about, you know, 1920 in Akron, and they were making really different things in 1920 or in different ways in 1920 than what's happening now. As you look at the state overall, where are some of the ways that you think higher education is poised to help push some of that workforce development in the economy?
Well, I think one big area is healthcare. In healthcare, you know, the largest employer in Phoenix is a hospital system. So, and Phoenix is a booming high growth market. So 6 of the 12 largest employers in the state of Ohio are hospitals. In part, that's a reality of more efficient automated manufacturing centers. You know, when I started at the Ohio Chamber in 1993, a million years ago, the largest employer in the state of Ohio was General Motors with over 100,000 people in the state. I don't know how many people they have now, but if it's 10,000, I'd be shocked.
That is amazing.
And you know, who the biggest employers are, you know, moves up and down, right? Amazon's a really big employer now, and a lot of them are their logistics centers, but they've also raised the whole wage base.
Yep.
You know, they started paying workers $20 an hour when everyone else was paying 12. So I think a lot of it changes over time. But the reality is, whether you're going to work in manufacturing or healthcare or logistics, I just don't know how you do it with just a, you know, the plain old high school degree. I think it is very difficult to succeed. And then unfortunately, if you get on a track where you don't have that education, I mean, it's long-term poverty. I mean, you can't presume because someone has a job that they're not under the poverty level.
Right.
Because a lot of them are. And no one wants that. They don't want that. You know, so again, I think it's part of our mission and your mission to really try and move as many people up that ladder as we can.
Well, you know, you mentioned earlier populism. But I'm always struck by how education is a constant, right? The more education you have, the better all of your life outcomes are. And so given that, how do you see how higher education fits?
I think what higher ed can do is make sure that the educational system that they're building is aligned with the economy that we have and the economy that we can grow in. And I think that's what's phenomenal about Owens and the community college model, because your whole mission is that. You're producing folks that are going to be nurses, or they're going to work as firefighters, or they're going to work in a factory. All the jobs that are sitting and waiting, you know, to be filled, we still have millions of open jobs, you know, in this country. It's just, to me, kind of bizarre. So I think that the most important thing higher ed can do in these crazy times is stay focused on the mission. And I really think the mission is, as much as humanly possible, align our educational or our higher ed educational system with where the jobs are. That doesn't mean the higher ed institutions can't help the students along and say, well, that's great, you know, that you want to do that. But here, we want to show you some occupational data that's going to illustrate, you know, AI. Right?
Absolutely.
Going to completely change professions. We had a nephew that was going to be a journalist, and I kind of looked at him and said, well, you might want to look into AI a little bit, because pretty soon a computer is going to be writing sports stories. So that's what I love about the community college sector and the work we do, is that you can't afford to have a program that isn't aligned with industry, because industry is your partner.
Thank you for saying that, because I think that regardless of what our students' path is when they come in, or what they discover once they're here, I am always struck by our students' practicality.
Yeah.
I mean, our arts program, they're looking at broadcast media, or they want to transfer in the fine arts.
Absolutely.
Or they're doing technical arts or things of that nature.
Yeah.
And they all have a plan. Their plans may change, or, you know, they might say, okay, I was going to do this, now I'm going to do that. But there's always a plan. And particularly around graduation time or beginning of the school year, whenever it is, you know, those opportunities when everyone's just happy and have all sorts of hope, right?
Yeah.
You hear that over and over again about how they're looking for what their path is, or they're launching to this, that, or the other, you know, for the ones that who transfer to, you know, one of our four-year partners or whatever the case may be. That's a big part of who they are.
Yeah.
They're not looking to waste time or energy or money or whatever it is. They're very much focused on their goals.
And I think it's great to have plans. And I had all sorts of plans, and none of them have worked from a professional standpoint for what I thought the plan would be. but it's worked out great. I think that what you need, you know, and I've got a high schooler, you know, you teach, you kind of run a place that teaches, you know, a lot of younger people. What you need are skills and skills in something that you're going to enjoy every day that doesn't feel like a job, quite frankly. It feels like, you know, you really enjoy it and you need to build the skills so that you can do that. Because where you don't want to be is to not have the skills and to get stuck in basically a poverty trap where you do a job you hate and you don't make a lot of money.
Right.
I mean, if you're going to hate the job, you should at least get paid a lot of money. You still don't want to hate it, but...
At least you see some sort of benefit from the effort you put forward every day.
I mean, that's my advice, you know, because we meet with a lot of young people, you know, now we're the age where the other parents are like, well, you got to talk to my kid because he wants to go to law school. And I'm like, do you want me to talk him out of law school? is this what you're looking for? I'm willing to do it. But again, I think it is figure out what you like. Accept the fact that your first job may not be, you know, in what you think you're going to do the rest of your career. At the end of the day, you got to get the skills and then do something that you love.
Well, and I think that that's hugely important. Understanding that education gives you the ability to have more choices than what you would have had previously.
Yeah. Absolutely. So again, I think that the only way to achieve the American dream is to get an education. I don't know any other way around it. This isn't the 50s. This isn't the 60s. You just can't walk into a job without skills, without training. Again, maybe it's a degree, maybe it's not. I'm a fan of degrees. I don't care if it's a 2 or 4 year. I think it gives you more flexibility long term in your career. But there's plenty of people making a lot of money taking 6 certificate programs.
Absolutely.
And learning how to, you know, run a specific machine in a factory that very few people know how to do.
Yeah. I mean, and to your point, you know, there's lots of ways to figure out what are skills and certifications and all of that. At the core of it is that there's a place for continued learning.
Absolutely.
There's a place for lifelong learning and that growth.
Yeah.
And regardless of where in life in your career you're in.
Absolutely.
So as we wrap up, can you talk a little bit about your perspective on the overall importance of relationships?
Yeah.
Because so much of what you do is about that. You know, you talked about alignment and all sorts of things, but it all kind of comes back to that.
Yeah, I think it does come back. And you know, one thing I'd have to say, I've been fortunate to have a lot of relationships. And I work for a boss who was the mayor of Columbus who played football for Woody Hayes. And I learned a lot from him about the network that he had. And I'm not sure there's anything more powerful than a OSU football team network. I mean, literally, they're all connected, right? You know, watching, you know, Coach Tressel now go around the state as lieutenant governor, you can just see it. So I would say that relationships are important, but you got to work at it, right? And I've had different jobs and I've had different friends you make through different jobs. And I haven't kept all of those folks as close friends, but I have a lot of them that are still close. I have, you know, my buddies from law school that we all sat in the same small section, right in a row, and we try and have dinner once a month. It's people that I worked with at the Ohio Chamber, you know, when I was in the early 90s or the telecommunications industry. You got to kind of work at it and kind of find ways to connect with those people. It doesn't have to be, you know, every day. It doesn't have to be every week, you know, because I'm currently a professional attender of high school sporting events for my son. So it kind of takes up a lot of time on the schedule. But again, I think the relationships do matter. It's personal, it's professional, but you got to work at it. It just doesn't happen.
We really appreciate you being on the podcast today.
You're phenomenal. Great job running the college.
Thank you. Dave, thank you so much for being with us today. We're incredibly grateful to you and the Montrose Group for your partnership. Thank you for your support and for your time today. And thank you to all of our listeners. Please remember to subscribe and join us for future conversations. Until next time, take care.